Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio on the BBS Network. We're also simulcasting on eSETI.org, or actually eSETI Stargate. eSETI.org is our website. So if you go to YouTube on eSETI Stargate, you can see this simulcast. And you can also engage us. A lot of our staff is in there, too, in the chat room. So don't miss that. Little heads up, my producer just called with BBS, and he said that we have over 80 affiliates now that are broadcasting our show, and it's going over 33 countries. So that's great news. I was wondering if this was getting out. I've never really looked at the ratings, but we just got that information in. And there's so much going in the news. I wanted to cover a little bit of the news today, and it's just some of these things need to be talked about. So. But, you know, after an extremely thorough investigation, you know, with the DOJ, the FBI, special counsel, 40 investigators, 500 interrogations, I can go on and on, you know. And these were done by anti-Trumpers. You know, it came up empty. So Trump was vindicated, exonerated of any Russian collusion or obstruction, according to the report. So now this was an extremely biased investigation backed by Democrats, which began with a DNC-funded salacious Russian dossier. If you want collusion, wait till the Obama team in Crimea comes up. Uranium won millions in bribes, and check out who received them. And so there's your Russian collusion right there. If you really need to keep doing this collusion thing, but to be honest with you, I'm just done with it. I don't even, as soon as I hear it, I just turn off the news, basically. So, and the whole thing is, if there was no crime, how can there be obstruction? You know, I think a lot of these people need a math class. Zero still equals zero. And they just can't do math, you know. But anyway, there's a great void of fact, you know, storytellers with obvious agendas. And it's just getting real. So anyway, you know, it's no Russian collusion, no obstruction, no brainer. And they just need to get over it and move on, you know, and do what's best for the country. And so this week has been designated as Gloatfest 2019. You know, Fox News will play a well-deserved week of neener, neener, neener. We told you so, followed by politicians, reporters squirming to the false narrative alive, avoiding all responsibility for deceiving the people for over 2 years. Do narcissists ever apologize? That's my question, you know. That actually came from the producer on Dan Bongino's show. He coined Gloatfest, so I'll have to give him credit for that. But we are going to be hearing that. Anyway, I looked up Trump derangement syndrome, narcissism, smeg heads, pathological liars, and eating crow in the dictionary, and it said CNN, MSNBC, New York Times, and the Washington Post, Juan Williams, and the majority of the Democratic Party. So now they're sitting ducks. Good news, we won't have to hear Russia, 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 collusion, 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 or will we? Will they man or woman up and apologize? Don't hold your breath. Did anyone ever stop and ask the question, why do we let these people inform and govern us? They're spiritually, morally, and integrity bankrupt, you know, so we really need to be self-governing here, you know, and get on with that. Now, the next story came up was this Jussie Smollett, and, you know, he was exonerated of all charges after a few phone calls by the Obamas, Jesse Jackson, Kamala, and Corey, you know, for his fake anti-black, anti-gay mega attack, you know, where he was bleached and threatened by hanging. Two brothers confessed the attack, as well as the fact that they were paid by Jesse. So anyway, you know, just so happened they were voting on an anti-lynching bill soon after that event. And I think the penalty for treason is hanging, basically. So no wonder they're trying to get an anti-lynching program going. So just as a disclaimer, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I do, however, have an extreme disdain for liars and those who make meritless accusations to further agendas and rise to fame at the expense of others. I deal with these people on a regular basis. The more famous you become, the more others that, you know, want to rise to fame on your back with meritless attacks spawned by jealousy and their own inadequacies. You know, I just said silly humans to that, but, anyway, there's a lot of that. There's just a lot of competition and backstabbing and messiahs in all of these fields. We probably talk a little bit of that in the show. But
so anyway, upcoming events. I'll be at Contact in the Desert, and that's May 31st to June 2nd. And so I'll be one of the keynote speakers there. It's like a big family reunion. And it's a great, great event. I'd definitely check that out. Just go to contactinthedesert.com for more information. I'll also be doing a UFO cruise in October, and that information is on the website as well. And don't miss the July 4th conference. And, you know, here at ESETI, you can actually see the ships yourself. They always put on a display every conference. And we've had tens of thousands of witnesses. These aren't satellites. These aren't meteors. You know, we have all the J-Tracker and Heavens Above info. So we're using NASA's information to prove these are not satellites. And, you know, we've done pretty thorough investigation on it. And satellites don't stop, turn, speed up, you know, make a right angle turn at 8,000 miles an hour, power up and respond to the people on the ground. So good luck with continuing with that narrative. Also, too, check out The Uncontrolled Narrative, speaking of that. That's out now, as well as Contact Has Begun, too. So those are on the website, ESETI, and those are free. So, you know, a lot of work went into that. Peter Slattery did a great job, and there's a lot of really good people talking about what's really happening in the community. As far as the 4th of July conference, some of the speakers we have Lauren Pritchard. She's with New Earth Consulting, Peter Maxwell Slatter, ESETI Australia, Jordan Sather, Destroying the Illusion, Ken Rolla, Fresh and Alive, John Vivanco, who is actually doing a workshop this May, and that's on the website too. He's doing a remote viewing. He's with Right Hemispheric. And we've got Michal Ledwith. You know, he's a Vatican theologian. We've got Aurora. She's the Frontline Rainbow Lasagna. She's great. I had her on the show as well. Ben Chastain and Rob Kuntz for the Edge of Wonder will be here. Allison Coe, Corey Good, and we're still adding some on, so there'll be a few more speakers. And one of our keynote speakers is going to be Barry Littleton, and Barry's on our show today, and he's a graduate in psychology, sociology, and ethnic studies from Wichita State University. And for the past 2 decades, Barry has been involved in administration for at-risk youth, including cognitive behavioral modification and managing aggressive behavior. He's also an options stock trader. He has researched and practiced several aspects of the spiritual, metaphysical, and the paranormal. His childhood experiences including encountering discarnated people, strange playmates, and an awakening, not his bedroom or house, an awakening, well, in his bedroom and house, interesting typo. There was no way of proving these odd encounters he was having, so he asked for them to become more tangible, be even more physical. At the age of 18, experiences resulted in 4 separate encounters that told about 18 hours of missing time. The combined experiences of missing time, conscious encounters, and past life memories lead him to do a vast amount of research and attempt to verify and explain what is going on. He's physically been on several different craft and has seen several different types of beings. And his website is barrylittleton.com. So without any further ado, Barry, are you with us?
Yes, I am. How you doing, James?
Hey, welcome to the show. It's great to hear from you again.
Hey, thanks. Good to talk to you again as well.
So, you know, I don't know where to start. You've had so many experiences, and you have all the degrees to understand these experiences, you know, which doesn't put you in the nutcase category, you know. So, you know, you're very, very qualified, you know, to document this. Boy, there's so much to say. I don't know where you want to start. Do you want to start at some of your childhood experiences? And we'll just go from there.
Well, sure. I'll say this first. It's a pleasure to talk to you. This is the end of Traumatic Brain Injury Awareness Month. And I am a survivor, so it's nice to contact and communicate with you during this time. So I have much appreciation for that. Far as my childhood, you know, things started off, sometimes I would wake up not at home in some type of a school that was different than the one I went to during the day here in the waking consciousness, unquote. But this was a physical experience. And it would involve in this school would be like this room. I'd be sitting there. And on this table would be several things, like a feather, some water, a bowl of water, and these things, these spears that look like steelies. And you'd have to do things with your mind. Like first you had to move the feather, then you got a little better, you start stirring the water, and then after that you would start levitating these balls. And that led into an experience that I call the acid rain that definitely went into my normal life. I knew that what was happening to me was physical and very real. Then that kind of when I wanted to ask for the same type of experiences, but that were more tangible that I could prove to people, because this wasn't provable. And then when I got a little older, I didn't have any experiences, but one from about the ages of 13 to 18, then I started having these physical experiences that involved somebody else there, and about 18 hours of missing time. I had four of those, and that's what kind of led me into. But after the missing, when those shifts come up on you like that, and then you're suddenly standing with somebody else missing time, but you can still see the faces of some of the beings, you can still feel them, you can see some of the technology and a lot of the information that was telepathically, you know, downloaded and transferred to you. But the retaining the information due to the vibration is very hard. So that's something I have struggled with and trying to spend a lot of my life putting back exactly everything that happened so it would be congruent.
Yeah, people don't realize that you have to take this from another dimension down here into this physical dimension, and there's veils, you know, you have to go through. And, you know, unless you're pretty adept, you know, you don't have any memory. Like, how many people remember their dreams? You know, there are some don't remember anything because, you know, and everybody's going out of body and dreaming and having otherworldly experiences. They just can't recall them because they can't get it through the veil unless the veils are very thin, you know, due to several different things. Like with here at the ranch, the veils are so thin that everything is popping in and out. But you know, you've got to do your spiritual practices and your homework to thin those veils so you can have these experiences. And there's one other thing I wanted to say. A lot of scientists want physical proof that these events happen, or they dismiss them, but they know they can't even measure less than 1% of the universe that we live in. And they know there's at least 11 dimensions, you know, that are out there. And you know, the magnetic light spectrum, we only see a small part of that. And so all these other things are happening around us. We just don't have the sensory equipment to experience. And, you know, if they can't put it in a test tube or measure it or get a photograph, which we have the photographs or video, you know, it doesn't exist. But even with the photographs, they don't accept it. But, you know, scientists have to kind of use logic here and realize you can't demand physical evidence on non-physical events.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I think that the ranch is a prime example of that, and that how the beings out there are on a much faster vibration and how they're communicating with so many people that are reaching out in the field of dreams and around there through that orb technology. I mean, it's really amazing. But if you're not very adept, or if you don't explore your consciousness, you'll miss some of the communications that come by that come to you on the superconscious level out there. You know that, because I mean they're moving fast, but they respond, and they're very mm-hmm. positive beings. So I think that's, you know, that's very exciting.
Yeah, people need to get still. You know, you need to get out here and meditate and kind of let all the chaos and confusion go, and you know, sit in a vortex. You're going to have experiences, and I've seen some pretty hardcore people, you know, very left brain people come out here and just have their life completely turn around.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I can understand that, because I mean, there's a part of me that really enjoys science, and science was the basis, the foundation for at least what I was experiencing. There was nothing else I had, because some of it was so far out, you know what I mean? But it can't all be categorized like that. It's some what I've seen, so much goes beyond even just normal science, because we don't incorporate enough spirit yet into our science. That it's just we're behind, and we're behind vibrationally. You know, this is comes down. But I just did a video recently on what is it really like to be in the presence of a non-human. Really, you know, it can be hard to remember what they're giving you telepathically when you're not face to face with them. There's something about their biofield that when you're not face to face with them, it makes the event horizon hard to remember. You know, and it's not that they're doing anything. I think it's some type of a natural effect of the difference in our vibration.
Yeah, there's so much going on around us. I mean, you know, they say the eyes you know, there's billions of bits of information just coming to the eyes alone. And we choose out of all that information what's going to be real for us. And it goes with the other senses too. You know, there's clairsentience, there's clairvoyance, there's, what's the other ones? I'm trying to remember all the different clairs out there. But everybody has different gifts and they experience things differently. What are some of the kinds of beings that you've engaged in, and what did they feel like, or what did you feel like their agenda was?
You know, when I was a child, for the first part of my contact experiences, the being that approached me was an insectoid. And he was coming around. I know he was doing something, projecting something with my optical nerves to where he appeared to be more of a person until I just actually saw him on this ship. And then, so that would be the first one. Another one was an amphibian being. And he's about the only two that have, you know, names. This being was named Mana. And Mana was on two ships I saw this being on and was tall, about 8 feet tall, okay? And the most unique about this being is the brain that seemed to be exposed on the outside. If you look on this planet, if you look at coral brain in the sea, if you check that out, the head is much similar to that, all right? Kind of a cross between that and I'd say like the hard armadillo skin, armadillo cover. It's like that, but yeah. It looks like the brain is exposed on the outside, just not soft. And that was a being that I encountered. And then the others, a lot of these beings that were on the ships I were on were not physical. You're dealing with different containers for consciousness, such as plasma, different light configurations. And I think we really have to acknowledge how many of this, if we're on a quote-unquote multidimensional ship, or like if it's Star Trek, if we're on the Enterprise, how many of the beings are not corporeal like Spock and Kirk and Scotty. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of it just pure, you know, people asked about that. They said, well, what kind of ships are there? And I said, well, some are physical and some are less dense physical. Some are energy. Some are, you know, pure conscious or light ships, or some are just Merkabas, pure consciousness and energy. And, you know, you have to understand the vibration continuum if you really want to understand this field. And I think the people that just stick to nuts and bolts, I think, are missing the big picture.
Mm-hmm. You know, to the point, even when interacting like on a craft with seeing some of these lights in these containers, these egg-like containers that look similar to glass, I kept seeing these on different parts of the ship, and I would see these different types of light floating in these mists. There's mist all over these ships that seem to make it hard for me to breathe, okay? It smelled like a type of Windex. But inside these glass chambers, there was these glass eggs was much more mist. And there were these lights floating around in there, moving around in there. And, you know, for the first time, I mistakenly thought they were power sources, and that these glass eggs must be power sources of some type. Until I got so sick from what I call temporal aphasia, because there's a difference in the dimensions between the ship, what we're seeing on the outside, and when we physically get inside. There's a different dimension. There's a distortion there, and it caused this sickness. Okay, and they termed it temporal aphasia is what they told me. And you start suffering from that, it feels a lot like you're going to throw up. Like similar to being on a roller coaster or a merry-go-round, how you lose your stomach. And until that started happening to the point that I was going to pass out, and some of these lights emerged from one of these eggs and came near me and started helping me to adjust to this off sickness that's about to ruin the experience. That's when I realized, well, my goodness, these are entities, high vibration entities that for whatever reason stay in those eggs while they're on board that craft. So that shows you even the different in dimensions on board a multi-dimensional ship, even though it was physical enough for me to be able to physically stand there and be there. But I got to tell you, James, I couldn't have survived there long.
Well, it's pretty intense. I know there's different beings with different agendas or programs. And even the very high frequency beings, like a lot of the Palladians, you know, some of them are seventh dimensional. We've had some seventh dimensional Palladians come in. And when you stand in their presence, the frequency that they're emitting, just this pure love and joy and bliss and just incredible wisdom coming from them, they don't match our frequencies. And so a lot of times it creates trauma because you go into process and you start processing, you know, all your fear, guilt, and unworthinesses and all the other stuff comes up and people don't realize you really, if you're going to work with high frequency beings, you got to raise your frequency and be able to hang there, you know, long enough to get some information without becoming, you know, an emotional roller coaster.
Yes, it's very true.
I know you've had that experience.
I had, you know, I was going to throw something out that, you know, I had never, I've had many experiences, but I had never seen a feline being. I had experienced feline energy and of non-corporeal, but I had not technically seen like a physical feline being. That is until I came to your place and then left and decided to get a regression before I went back. So much stuff happened to me at your ranch just in the time I was out there the first time that, you know, it really sent me for a loop. It's one thing to sit up here and talk about this, and I'm just going to come clean that every time something like this happens to me, no matter if it was when I was a kid or at my age now, James, it feels like I'm brand new every time.
Yeah.
And I felt brand
new. People see me get excited. Yeah, when a big ship comes over and powers up, and people hear me get excited, and they go, God, how long have you been doing this? You know? And I said, way too long. And I said, no, I feel the energy from the ship. And when they're powered up, they're like sending a message out and you feel it. And I get excited when other people get excited, you know, and have those breakthroughs. But, you know, now I'm at the point where I go, that was interesting. There's so many things happening. You know, now at night, you know, people are knocking on my walls and Bigfoot's walking around here and lights are flying through my room and everything else. And now I just go, okay, what do you want? You know, like,
and you know, no one wants to acknowledge that unless they've been out there. Look, there are Sasquatches all around that place and it's real. Okay. And I mean, somebody else was with me. They're howling at me and my friend Albert were standing out there. They threw a rock. I mean, it was unreal. And I had so much interaction with that population when I was out there, that it's unreal. And I mean, I don't want to go off topic here, but I'm convinced still that there's a portion of them that are chlorophyll-based, that they're plant-based. And what you've got going on out there, I think sometimes is beyond imagination. I don't know how many there are, but it was, last time I was out there, I almost got out of there with nothing really super paranormal happened to me till the day before I left and I got blasted.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, some of them are silicon-based. That's what we found out. We had the hair analyzed from one of the Bigfoots, and they're actually silicon-based, which is really interesting.
Really?
And there's different types of Bigfoot. That's what people don't understand. There's not just one Bigfoot out there. There's some pretty primitive ones, you know, that are out hanging around. There's some that are more human-looking in their face, and they're very advanced, and Native Americans will tell you about that. You know, there's some that help the Native Americans get rid of the ones that were negative. And they have stories about that. You know, they had some that were stealing their children and things like that. And so the benevolent ones helped them track them down and get rid of them. But, there's so much of the story. And, you know, some of them can phase out right in front of you. They'll be standing there and they just phase out and disappear. And they're always whooping. They do this whoop, whoop. You know, you hear that going on out here, and they knock back on the trees and everything else. So,
or the owls. You know,
yeah, the owls. And they howl when they really howl. Boy, yeah, the hair on your neck stands up when they howl.
You know, and before I got there the first time, there was one of them that was communicating with me telepathically a week before I came to your ranch the first time. And I couldn't recognize that's what it was. So we're dealing with entities that can apparently see a part of the future. Okay. And telepathically, when I received mind speak out there in that yurt, look, I was straight up overpowered by that being.
Yeah.
He flooded me with so much telethought so quick. It was overwhelming. And then when he shut the channel off, I was sitting on the end of the bed there trying, like a kid on Mr. Rogers, going, trying to get it to reactivate, and I couldn't. He was a stronger telepath than me.
Two brothers here had the same experience, and they said when they interacted with it, and the next day they were trying to tell their story, and they still couldn't tell it without, you know, having almost an emotional breakdown. They said they are so wise and so loving and so powerful that, you know, it shook them up, you know, really, and they just weren't ready for that experience. But they came back, and now they really want to, you know, reconnect, and they're bringing their, you know, peanut butter and banana sandwiches and peanut butter jars and apples and everything else. And they've had two encounters since they've been here. So they remember you. And then Larkin O'Toole had an encounter. Peter O'Toole's son had an encounter here. There's so many people here that have seen the ships. Everybody living here have seen the UFOs and the ships. So it's just an ongoing thing.
I'd say whoever, people saying that all different types of Sasquatch are apes are definitely wrong. Whatever you have on out there are very old and not at all what people are saying. Half of that is just a hoax what people are being told about a breed of them. I mean, there's something serious going on out there. Whatever we're dealing with felt like a shaman. I had just done a video over invisibility, and then it was getting practiced on me out there by this thing. I couldn't see anything, but I knew I was being watched. You know, I think we need to acknowledge how much they move on the ground as far as how much contact with the ground they have, like spider crawling and things like that. Just saying, even to the point that maybe they can shapeshift to appear to be trees. Just food for thought, you know.
Yeah, they definitely do. They do disappear, and they merge. You know, it's like you'll be looking at a forest and there's nothing there, and all of a sudden they're just standing there. And people are noisy when they walk through. We're really loud when we walk through the forest. And you know, up here they have Native Americans say, you know, if you go out looking for Bigfoot, you'll never find him, but if he wants to find you, he will. And so it is all about consciousness and being respectful, you know, when you're in the forest, and they'll pick up your frequencies and your energy.
You know, one last thing on that, you know, and I don't sleep good at night, so I would always walk to and from the field of dreams and then that yurt, and it's a very creepy walk down there, especially about, around 3, 4 o'clock, 4:30.
Yeah.
And I would hear this chanting. And it was just mental, kind of, like telepathic. I mean, it happened several times. And I just dismissed it as, well, maybe I'm picking something up off the land. Maybe tribes that once exist on the land. And I just kept dismissing it until about a year later, I hear a couple of the Bigfoot researchers talking about how some Sasquatch have been found chanting around human habitations. And they think it's a protective prayer. Whether it's for them or us, unknown. But I mean, when things like that start becoming solid third-dimensional reality proof, it really shifts your consciousness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've got footage of winged beings descending into the ground here, coming back up out of the ground. And I've got pictures and photographs of Kathy just took a photograph of Lemurian Hill there. And there's the most massive light being appeared right on top of the hill, and she got a beautiful photograph. And it's, you look at it, it's undeniable. It's just incredible. And we're still getting, every time it's a clear night, I walk outside for 10 minutes and I'll film four or five ships, you know, because it's cold. We're only out for about 10 or 15 minutes. But every time I go out, and you know, last night I came out, it was raining, you know, it was kind of cloudy, and all of a sudden this hole opens up and boom, big power up right in the middle. It was the only place I could see it. You know, it powered up right in that hole. And you get a little buzz from it, you know, and I go, thank you. Okay, I'm going to go chill out now, you know, so go meditate and see what they want. But, yeah, they're busy now. They're real busy.
Yeah. You know, when the time is right, before we run out of time too, I definitely want to talk about, that device in Mount Adams.
yeah, whatever you want to talk about. I know we had John Vivanco here with a bunch of remote viewers and talking about the device in the mountain. And, you know, this is a blind target. There's no preempting, you know, you don't know what you're looking at or anything. And, boy, they nailed it, this information that came out. But I'd like to hear what you saw on the mountain.
Okay. It starts off with, okay, first of all, like I said, I did a regression before I went back the second time. I just didn't tell anybody. In fact, like the week before I came. I had so much happening out there, and a little bit with these little times I'd see the mountain, and I was kind of, these ships would come real close, and I was starting to skip out a little bit. You know what I mean? They're getting too close, and I knew that contact was made. But the sex, so I had described this device that was inside Mount Adams during this regression that was actually producing orb technology. All right, these orbs. So it's orb technology, produces these orbs, and that takes us into that whole quantum hologram of consciousness thing. But these orbs, when they get in the biofield of a person, they get in your biofield, they can alter your perception. Okay, so that's what this device is doing in there, and I kept talking about it during this regression. Now, I didn't put this together immediate. The first day I'm out there the second time, at night, I'm standing with Erica, Luke, and John, I think, Bertoli. And they have these really nice binoculars. And I'm looking through the binoculars at the mountain, and I see just on the side of the dimensional door there, what looks like that there's like a pyramid. During the day, it looks like a pyramid in the ice on the mountain on the side, right next to the dimensional door. But underneath that pyramid, I could see what looks like, I swear to you, strobe lights, like a disco strobe lights, or maybe how in the 60s or 70s, how they would represent a computer system going in one of those big old boxes with the all the lights.
Yeah.
I kept seeing this over and over. I sat there and watched it, to a point where I asked John and Erica, I said, please tell me when nobody's shining lasers anywhere. And they're going, nobody's shining one. And I sat there, James, and watched this thing for 30 minutes. Other people were watching it too, okay? Then later on, all right, so I hear this remote viewing from John. I can't think of the guy's name fully, but he's one of the presenters.
Yeah, Vivanco.
Right, John Vivanco. Yeah, and they're describing something quite similar. And I was saying this 2 years ago. I even did a video with Lorcan O'Toole where I was saying that I thought that there was a device out there. And you remember we had done, I did a pineal gland exercise with everybody before at Skywatch. And everybody, especially the psychic people in the group, were saying, I keep seeing a grid. And this grid they were seeing, I believe, is what actually scans the soul life memories of people that are near the mountain and within your property and maybe a short range there. And then what happens is this device produces an orb that will further your consciousness for something like, let's say, me. I hadn't seen a feline being. Here you go. taking this in a transfer, and a lot of people are listening, so I think this can be actually coded and proven for people who are familiar with the book The Keys of Enoch by J.J. Hertog. I would ask that everybody looks up what's called an OR station, O-R station, all right? And the pages 183, 219, 215, 216, 299, 341, and 363. If they look at those pictures, they'll see actually this crystalline device that is supposed to be an OR station. And also they describe what this OR station is, something that is actually working galactic frequencies. Okay, in fact, if I were to read it real quick to you, what it says in the deal, OR station, network centers for the docking of technology for advanced civilizations capable of traveling between galaxies and super galaxies. And then when I watched that 2 years later, I'm watching this video from remote viewing hemispheric, and it's wonderful. They're describing the same device in there. And even better, they're describing a singularity that is within the mountain, that there are many entities rushing through the singularity at once, and how it's close to the device. And you can, for Lord's sake, you can see that light right there when you're looking at the mountain at night. You can see it. I remember the first time I was out there, I just met you the first night, and people were saying, what's that light? What's that green light? And somebody says, oh, it's just campers. And you're like, no, it's not. That's above the camping line, and it's this and that. You describe why that was not campers. And I mean, this is my first time out there. I was blown away. Yeah. But now I know that's that singularity. You can see it. For goodness sake, you can actually see the device under the ice functioning in there. I saw it. Other people saw it. So I'm sorry, I'm getting too excited, man. But that's anyway.
No, it's good. I know, because we have tons of footage of that happening, you know, the different strobes and flashings and all the crazy stuff here. And we had a guy up here with, like, a guy, he had $150,000, Freeman was his name, of equipment. And he had everything you can think of. He had military-grade thermal cameras, wow. Night vision, everything. He had on this setup. It was unbelievable. He called it a weapon of mass instruction or something like that. Or I can't remember what he called it. or detection setting. You know, like a mass detection, but amazing, you know, and he proved without a doubt. He said, you know, there's no energy. These things moving all over the mountain do not have heat on them. They're not registering in the thermal cameras. And, you know, he said, they're moving way too fast. They're moving all over the mountain. You know, he just went through the whole thing and he just said, look, I can tell you that these are not campers. These are not hikers. These aren't people, you know, throwing flashlights back and forth 13 miles away. You know, everybody comes up with new stories. But, you know, and that area there, if you hike up in that area, first of all, it's wilderness. There's no roads up there. You can't take any kind of a motorized vehicle up there. So that eliminates that. And second of all is that terrain up there is treacherous. I mean, it's glaciers and lava cliffs and giant lava boulders. There's no vehicle there's no roads anyway, but there's no vehicles that could go over that and be in one piece unless it's some kind of an anti-gravity device or whatever. But, you know, it's just impossible. So it's definitely what's going on there. There's so many things going on there, but it's not anything known. I can say that for a fact. We don't have anything that you know, in mainstream that could do what's going on up there. Now, are there helicopters up there? There are helicopters that have done a couple of rescues up there, and we've documented that. It's very obvious. They're very loud. You can hear them very easily. You know, people say, is it our secret space fleet? Well, this has been going on since the Native Americans had stories before the secret space fleet even existed. You know, Dr. Dion Hynek, all those guys were doing research on this stuff in the past. So the timeline's off, and there's just too many different types of craft flying around there. So, you know, they just keep pushing these programs, you know, trying to explain it and through known applications or whatever. And it's unknown. You know, it's not unknown to us, but it's not known, you know, by any of their standard measurements that they've been using.
It's a wonderful thing, because being out there, it helped me correlate a couple of things. Now, the first experience I had that I call adult onset experiences, when I was about 18, that involved this missing time, I have an interaction with this craft that got very close. And at first, you know, it's metal. Especially towards the end of the experience, especially, it's metal. It almost looks similar to what they could call a saucer type of quote unquote Pleiadian craft. It just looks similar to that. And then it starts morphing on me up in the sky, and it morphs into these crystals. On my YouTube channel, I call this the morphing organic UFO. I've got sketches that I had Kassara do for me that shows this thing the way I saw it. It looks similar to a Merkaba, but it's got these crystal like ball spears on it with these stalagmites coming out. I've never seen anything like it, but I'll tell you, it really threw me for a loop when I saw it, and I couldn't find anything that described it, except for when I finally got a hold of one of the copies of this book, Keys of Enoch. That's been back in the 90s, and on page 215 and 216, they describe what's called tri-pyramidal Merkaba and bi-pyramidal Merkabas. I saw a tri-pyramidal Merkaba. But nonetheless, when I see this device inside the mountain and what it looked like when it's sparkling in there like that, what I physically saw and what the remote viewers are describing is definitely adjacent to the technology I saw in the sky. You know what I mean? Transferring. So for me, it just shows, you know, just some confirmation, and it helps, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I've got to get J.J. Hertek out here. He's a good friend of mine, and he's always busy during our conferences, and we're still working on maybe I can get him out here to do a workshop. But, you know, we filmed things over my head that were these glyphs, like golden glyphs, and I go, what the heck is this, you know? And they would tell me, you know, the Zohar is coming, and I go, what the heck's a Zohar? And then this thing appears over my head, and we get pictures of it and everything, and he would go and explain to me, you know, all these events that are happening here. And he said, you know, all the things I've written about seem to be manifesting at your ranch. And then the Ryan Council of Light Beings that are contacting me, his drawing of one of them is almost identical to my drawing, very, very similar. And, you know, it's really interesting to get the validation on all this stuff. But, you know, there's still those out there that, no matter what, you know, especially with the lion beings and the feline beings, you know, those are all throughout ancient history and contact. They call them Nisringa and Nerissa. You know, in India, they're the benevolent protectors of the gods and protectors of the villages. And so they're all throughout history, and they do exist, but, you know, people either want to disqualify it and say it doesn't exist or demonize it. And it's sad if they just chill out and engage these beings, you know, they could make some awesome new friends.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, there's so much going on in the area you're at. You know, there's some type of a city next door in what they call Sleeping Lady. That's active also.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a big connection there. And so but that takes it into a whole nother thing. You know, like I said, I went out there and really freaked out.
Yeah, I remember that. You guys are watching that massive ship. Yeah, tell us that story about that ship you saw come down behind Sleeping Beauty or Flat Top Mountain.
Okay. I was standing with Mountain or Albert that was working out there, and this is probably about, it's got to be about 1 o'clock, and we're actually coming back, and we're standing in the Pleiadian Circle. And as he was, as you were talking, I keep noticing this, I thought it was Jupiter or Venus at first, kind of on the side of this pine tree out there, so I could measure where it was at. And then it started moving on me, kind of moving down, and I didn't say anything at first. And then finally, Albert says, are you seeing that over there? I said, yeah, I think it's Venus. And then it starts morphing on us, okay, into about 5 individual spheres vertically, then it goes back to 1. Then it does it horizontally and it goes back to 1. Then it starts making a type of a star formation. And then it starts descending, okay, descending towards what's called Flathead Mountain there. Yeah. And when it, as I still get, it's been 2 years, I still get hyped up talking about this. it starts going down and it goes down below Flathead Mountain. It descends below it and it comes back on, okay? It goes out, but then it comes back on. I can see it. So I'm seeing it through the mountain to where I thought at first I kept trying to rub my eyes, look at this thing, saying, okay, it must have descended in front of the mountain and my visual acuity is off. And then it rises back above the trees and goes back down. It does it twice. And the third time it just disappears on into that mountain, keeps going deeper into it. But I could see this ship. I could see the light halfway when it was behind the mountain. So this was implying that the mountain was holographic. And I mean, I was really at this point kind of tripping out. And I look over at Albert that worked for you out there. And he's kind of looks like a football player when they're going, hut, 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 because he's kind of breathing hard, you know. And I didn't say anything. Well, finally I said, you know, what are you seeing? And he keeps going, it's impossible. It's impossible. I said, don't worry about that. Just tell me what you're seeing, because I know that that type of delusion cannot be shared. So if the mountain air got me, or in case my traumatic brain injury did something I wasn't aware of, I knew that he wouldn't be seeing the same thing I was. And he starts saying, I can see it through the mountain. Is this some sort of a trick? Some sort of a hologram? And so then that's how that experience went down. And so the next day, we did that video. I couldn't hardly talk because I'm looking over at there, looking at that thing and saying, well, how much of this is not what it appears to be?
Oh,
that's
yeah,
what happened.
There's so much. I mean, we had this technology called PIP technology, or Harold's Oldfield technology, and we filmed the mountain, and we filmed some of the transpersonal lease sessions, and the energy coming off those sessions, and the mountain as well. There's more energy coming off the pyramids than more off Mount Adams than the pyramids, because they filmed the pyramids as well. And they go, well, I don't know what's in that mountain, but I have never seen the energies, and they're like purples and violets and gold and pink energy and layers just coming off of that mountain, vibrating outward. And people feel it. If you're sensitive, you come up here, you can feel, you know, the transmissions coming off of that mountain. But there's some pretty extreme, you know, spiritual technologies going on. And with the night vision camera, we actually filmed a giant pyramid appeared like in another dimension on the mountain. We actually got it on film as well. Actually, I'm looking at it right now on my computer. It's wow. Right in front of me. But, you know, amazing stuff. So, I mean, there's so much interdimensional things going on here. If you have the right equipment, you can film it. And if you're spiritually awake, you can experience it yourself. But because we have all the equipment we need naturally, we just have to turn it on. But there's just so much going on here. It's you just can't pigeonhole it in any one category.
Well, I believe that inside of Mount Adams is a similar column also, a column of what is like a golden liquid energy, angelic golden liquid energy, but it's the same type of orgone that powers some of the ships in a way that the same as some of the propulsion system. I believe that mm-hmm. is actually also what powers that Mount Adams is not just a hangar and a type of a base, but I think it also powers that city next door under in the Mount Sleeping Lady mountain range. That's what I believe. You know, I think the Mount Adams, I think that's doing many things, not just as a singularity and orb technology, a device that's left over from the Type 1 civilization used to exist on Earth, or perhaps Type 2, you know, to keep us from falling asleep. All of us, that is. Anyway.
Yeah, they have some crazy, you know, stuff out here. There's over in Snowden area, just on the other hill over here, there's some major underground, you know, military stuff going on. And there's some other stuff happening, too. I know people that know about it. They're on a very high level of security. They won't tell me where it is, but I know what's going on the mountain is far beyond anything military. But, you know, there is some crazy stuff going on, and I wouldn't be surprised if they aren't, some of those ships, they're not messing with us. But I know by the majority of these ships, with the energy exchange and interacting with the beings on them and everything else, it's definitely not military. You know, it's not back engineered stuff, you know, unless they're, you know, putting on outfits, they're, you know, extraterrestrial or something. Who knows?
I had a question for you, actually, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Has there been any more activity with the pterotorn or the pterodactyl type of thing that was seen around the mountain in that area, or that was seen eating roadkill?
No, there has been. I haven't seen it recently. I saw it, you know, a couple of years ago, but I haven't seen anything recently. But there's still accounts of that happening, you know, where, you know, as you said before, where people would drive off the road because the thing would be standing in the middle of the road eating a dead deer or something. But all kinds of pilots, everybody have been seeing these. They're pterosauruses, actually. They have that ball at the end of their tail. And we're actually... Okay. John Pavanko, you know, with Right Hemispheric, you know, they're going to do a whole session on this. And there's a lot of, on the other side of the mountain, there's some rivers there. And people have seen these things coming down and hitting fish, you know, grabbing fish out of the river. And they said, you know, these are not eagles. You know, they're definitely not eagles. They're bat winged and they have the same ball on the end of their tail. So, you know, a lot of people seeing it still, and I haven't seen any new ones here, but you know, we had it land in a tree here right in front of the field, and it was screeching. It sounded like Jurassic Park or something.
You know, without being too weird, but who cares, because just being a contactee is already so weird, you don't even got to make nothing up. Hey, listen, you know what?
Yeah.
You know, there used to be a Transformers that were called the Dinobots. but one of them was a pterodactyl. And with the way you described the sightings the first time we met, the way you described the sightings reminded me of almost a sentinel. So could that possibly be some type of a cyborg technology that is, I mean, it's just food for thought. You know what I mean? Because I just find it very interesting that you said the way it was circling the mountain. That's almost the way a sentinel would do it. Just food for thought.
I know they can create androids and all these other things there. So, you know, who in the heck knows? But, I know that the, also too, is that there is a doorway there to the inner earth, and they still have all those animals, you know, even prehistoric animals preserved there in the inner earth. And so, you know, good chance that they might be taking those in there as well.
Wow. I wouldn't doubt it. Where's that door you said?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Where's the inner earth door you said?
Well, there's many levels to that mountain. There's the deep inner earth level where there's beings of all kinds of mythological beings still living there, preserved, you know, and what we call elves and gnomes and fairies and things of that nature, along with some beings that have been here forever. They're more etheric beings and all different types of beings. And it's like a big genetic zoo down there. And then the next level up is like a galactic airport, basically. And then they have that device that's a big energy emitter. So there's so much going on there. You know, just all kinds of different things happening there.
I definitely have to agree with that. And I think when people talk a lot about, you know, ancient Earth, what it was really like, I think that's a prime example right there of how much more advanced it was than we are now. And I often have had the thought of, like, how many devices like this ore station in Mount Adams are still from the past Earth are still functioning on this planet. You know, I mean, you've definitely got a unique one out there. I'm wondering how many devices are there like that.
There's quite a few, actually. Like, there's one in the Tetons. There was one in Shasta, but they had to close that one down. There's just too much aggression there and too much interference. But they still have quite a few on the planet. And a lot of these things are getting reactivated, you know, now, because we're going through a whole different time, you know, fortunately. But the, you know, speaking of time, I think we're hitting the end of the hour. I haven't heard anything from the producer yet, but I know we're coming up on the end of the hour, so we're probably going to have to sign off here pretty quick. But what's the best way for people to get in contact with you?
My website is always forever undergoing construction, so YouTube is where a lot of my information is. Just Barry Littleton on YouTube. I'm also on Patreon. At least you can see a lot of what I have to say is on there. And you can go to my website. It'll link you there also, BarryLittleton.com. Awesome. And I try to respond to emails, BarryLittleton13@gmail.com.
Great. Hey, well, awesome. You know, thanks for coming on the show. And I can't wait to see you July 4th weekend. And hopefully it'll all continue.
Hey, thank you, James. I really appreciate it.
All right. Keep up the good work. And this is James Gilliland with As You Wish Talk Radio and also eSETI Stargate on YouTube. Signing off. Have a great evening. Stay in the heart. You know, keep an open mind, loving heart, and pure intent. Good night.